The Museum of Modern Art recently announced that it had acquired 14 video games to be installed in its permanent collection coming in March. Jamin Warren, founder of the video game arts and culture magazine Killscreen, helped the project along by creating a short list of games for consideration. He's with us now via Skype from New York City. Jamin, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm very well, and what an exciting thing. I know it's sparked a lot of controversy, but I'm curious about Killscreen's role in this acquisition. How'd you get involved?
Sure. We've had a running relationship for the past couple years. They've been an amazing partner. One of their curatorial assistants purchased a copy of our magazine when we were getting started, and that sparked the dialogue. We were able to meet with Paola Antonelli, who's the senior curator there. And we were very fortunate last year to do a one-night party for about 1,000 people, bringing video games to three of the floors at MoMA tied to their Talk to Me exhibition. So MoMA's definitely had a conversation with games over the last couple years, and we're very fortunate to be a part of that.
So it's embracing it on some level, but has been under fire from some corners for elevating the status of video games to art, especially since this announcement. But I do recall a few years ago, Roger Ebert declaring video games will never be art. I'm wondering how MoMA's design curator, Paola Antonelli, you mentioned, how does she defend the acquisition?
Well, I mean, I think for starters, anytime you fall into these very large, wide-reaching definitions about what is or what is not art, you're going to find yourself in a bit of trouble, simply because that definition of art, even amongst people in the art world, is a moving target. So to say that, you know, video games as an entire medium wholesale does not qualify as art, I think is a pretty facile way to think about not just art, but also the nature of games. So I'm happy with MoMA that we've moved past this conversation of whether or not video games are or aren't art, but which games qualify as art, and really highlighting what types of titles are appropriate for a museum setting.
So what they've chosen for titles are 14 games for the permanent collection, eventually going up to 40. Do you have a list in front of you? Can you tell us the 14 games?
Sure. They're Pac-Man, Tetris, Another World, Myst, SimCity 2000, Vibribbon, The Sims, Katamari Damacy, EVE Online, Dwarf Fortress, Portal, Flow, Passage, and Cannibal.
So years beginning 1980, Pac-Man, and then the most recent game, Cannibal, 2009. What was the criteria for being chosen?
There were a couple different aspects. I mean, there are a lot of ways to think about games. And what's exciting is that MoMA defined their own criteria. You find this a lot with museums and other cultural institutions that have an interest in games. They usually just pick things that they think that the public will enjoy or they think is most popular without defining how those games fit into the larger collection. And so I think one of the things that MoMA did wisely is outline a set of criteria that you can use to judge all games that will be taken in the MoMA. For different museums, it's going to be different. But they fall roughly on four different categories. The first is behavior. This would be described as like mechanics. So what games do, the scenarios, the rules, incentives. Those are the things that designers kind of create from the ground up. The other would be aesthetics, which I think most people who play games respond to very highly, which is just what do games look like? And certainly it's a visual medium. There are two others that are a little bit more abstract. One was space, which was the space that was designed not just with the code as brick and mortar, but sort of the temporal existence of the game, kind of where it sits, mm-hmm. what kind of experiences it creates. And then the last one is time, which for anyone who plays iOS games, this is something that's actually become very interesting, I think, for game players, in that you're seeing a lot more games these days play with shorter bursts, shorter sequences. That might be akin to the early arcade games. But, I think what's great about games is that, particularly on the time question, you are making a decision about whether or not you want to engage with a medium, and so deciding how much of your time it's going to take. That's a crucial design choice on the part of game designers.
We're talking about the addition of 14 video games to the Museum of Modern Art's permanent collection, which has proved controversial for the museum. With us is Killscreen founder Jamin Warren, who advised MoMA on the acquisition. It's funny to look at the comments online about this issue. I wonder if there's been more debate over whether these games belong at MoMA or which games were chosen.
Probably a little bit of both. I mean, what you find is the people, like the art critic at The Guardian, who is very critical of MoMA's acquisition, you find that the folks who are saying that games don't belong in museums, I think, you know, in general, they tend to be a lot older or people who didn't grow up on games. And so this seems like a sort of a crazy position for the museum to take. But games have grown so much. And I think for anyone who's grown up with games, they understand that the experiences that they're having, those are unique experiences, and that those are the same types of experiences that are elicited by other art forms. And so it's natural for them to think that games would be included. But, you know, obviously, like any list, it's always controversial in the sense that everyone has a favorite game of theirs that they feel like belongs. Games are, populist medium in the sense that everybody plays games. And what's wonderful, I think, about the acquisition, and I think this is not necessarily true about other types of acquisition. So, you know, the Scream, Edward Munch's The Scream is up at MoMA right now. And you have to go, you can look at images online, but you can't go in person. You obviously have to go in person to see it. And what's great about these selections is that, you know, that the vast majority of these games are available for people to experience in their own homes. And so I think it does kind of show, I think with any popular medium like that, it's very exciting that people can have both the experience of seeing them when the games will be shown in the design gallery next year, but they can also play these experiences at home. I think that's a great way to engage with an art form.
I remember reading that that same critic from The Guardian had never played any of these games, by the way. Now, a question about how one acquires a video game. I mean, this is a mass-produced item. An art collection gets what, the cartridge, the code, the intellectual property?
I know it's very complicated. You know, I wasn't there on the acquisitions conversation. You know, part of acquisitions is deciding what, and then there's a process that goes behind it. But the museum worked with the original creators or with the publishers of the games to essentially acquire copies of the code and the right to display the games in public. There's obviously, you know, more legal. there's more of a legal framework. But, you know, the one of the exciting things is that this is new territory that's being explored by lots of different art forms. And anytime you take in something new, it raises a host of questions. So how do you take performance art or digital art? And, you know, Paola has been very forward in terms of acquiring things that maybe would be considered unorthodox into the collection already. The acquisition of different typefaces, the at symbol is something that recently joined the collection. So they've been accustomed to dealing with some of the gray areas and some of the new territory that's being explored in terms of the world of acquisition. But it is very exciting to see them kind of, you know, stake their claim and say, these are the games that we feel very passionately about, and we'll do whatever it takes to make sure that the public can see them.
Jamin, we're going to run out of time in a minute, but you know, yesterday I got an email from a listener saying, you know, yes, we're hearing about gun control after the mass shootings in Connecticut, but when are we going to talk about banning violent video games? I'm wondering if this is still a consideration for gamers, that people hear video games and don't think of artistry or elegance, but of, you know, shoot 'em up or Grand Theft Auto.
Sure. I mean, it's obviously a very complicated issue. I mean, first and foremost, it's important to remember that the vast majority of video games that are consumed are not violent. We are talking about a very small segment when we think about the popularity of a game like Angry Birds. And we're talking about video games as a medium and about the ability to tell stories. That doesn't mean that video game makers don't have a responsibility when they portray violence to portray it in a meaningful way. And I think that any instances in which the violence is being is wanton or disrespectful, but that doesn't mean that violence isn't something that video games can explore. And we certainly grant that right to all different mediums, whether it's the Red Badge of Courage or Apocalypse Now. We're accustomed to seeing violence in other mediums. So I would just ask that we sort of grant that same right to game makers. And then the burden is on them to make sure that when there is a depiction of violence, that it makes sense in the context of the game that's being created. So it makes sense if it's a war game that, as a first-person shooter, it would make sense that, you know, that would be the environment, that would be one of the things that you do.
Jamin, I'm sorry that I have to end there because we've run out of time, but I really want to thank you for your time today. Jamin Warren, founder of Killscreen, it's a video game arts and culture magazine and website. You can learn more about MoMA's new acquisition on the Word of Mouth Facebook page.